You look just like I did at your age.
Please don't say that, Dad.
I'm 16 years old. I'm not a child.
Don't you take that tone of voice with me, young lady.
Love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
You're listening to Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Two friends since first grade, now dads, reliving the movies we grew up on, the Disney movies we grew up on, with our own kids. I'm JB Wagner.
And I'm Eddie Ferguson. And on today's episode, you'll find us just around the river bend, singing with all the voices of the mountain as we review Pocahontas. But first, JB, how are you and the family doing?
Eddie, I need a little bit of reassurance, a little bit of a therapy session this morning. I know that your kids are younger than ours, but anyways, I just need you. You have a sister with you've got other nieces mm-hmm. and nephews. Eddie, do the kids get better at eating dinner? I just need some reassurance that eventually they will stop fighting us at every meal, unless it's pizza.
I've learned this as an uncle watching my sister and brother-in-law, that it happens, but it takes a really long time.
Really, really long time. That's how it feels right now.
We are there too.
It used to be around 50-50 with Buddy. Like every kind of other meal he would eat, and then the next one he wouldn't. The ratio has gotten really worse, where it's every meal now, every dinner, that we have to pull and prod and threaten and all of everything we can. Because he just doesn't eat. He doesn't want to eat anything. It's like before you get to the table, it's like, I don't want that. I'm just like, no, this is not how we're going to run this house. Like, you have to eat. And he's like, buddy, you need to eat more food. And I think the term my wife uses is a failure to thrive. Like, if you don't eat, you're going to have a failure to thrive. And he just like, the only time we can get it is if we literally put it in his mouth. And then he eats, and we're fighting that. I was like, okay, I can feed him, and he will eat, or he just will sit there the whole time. And he now just like sits there, just like he's not. He just like sits there.
Does he do the thing where all of a sudden he no longer likes the things that he used to always love?
100%. 100%.
That is what is the most frustrating to me, where I'm like, listen, mm-hmm. kid, you've been eating hot dogs forever. Yep. What do you mean you don't mm-hmm. like hot dogs anymore? Oh, we don't like dinosaur chicken nuggets anymore. Okay, yep. Like, who doesn't mm-hmm. love a chicken nugget shaped of a dinosaur? Yes.
And now we're starting to see it. My daughter, who is a couple years younger than my son, she used to be the really good eater, would eat almost anything. But not anymore. Now she is starting to get super picky about what
like,
she
do you think they had a meeting?
They 100% had a meeting. Secret meeting.
He's like, listen, you've played to them a little too much. This is what you need to do. We siblings need to stick together. You need to start being picky with your food. And she's like, okay, all right, I'll follow your lead. I'll do it.
I will go with you on this. She still eats better, but it's getting really close. Like, they're getting in the same zone of just like, come on, guys. Like, you love this stuff. It's great. It's just chicken. It's just right. It's cheese. And like, you should love this stuff. So that's where we're at right now. I just needed some reassurance that eventually it might end. But from what you're telling me, it's going to be, it's the long game, not the short game.
So speaking of food, all right, at time of this episode being released, Disneyland will have finally reopened after being closed for over a year of therapy for the two of you, of your kids not eating. If you could go back to Disneyland, right now and eat one thing, what would you go eat at Disneyland?
I mean, the first thing that comes to my head is not anything healthy. It's the
it's therapy food. It's so therapy, of course, food. It's not healthy.
Therapy food. It would be the beignets. So they have the Mickey shaped beignets that are in the New Orleans Square. But then also, you don't even have to go. You don't have to pay to get into Disneyland to get good beignets. You can just go over to the Jazz Kitchen in downtown Disney.
There we go.
In California and in Disneyland, and you can get them without even having to pay to get inside the park. So that's the first thing that jumps into my head. Whenever we would go to downtown Disney, I always had to get beignets. We go there a lot for like my birthdays, especially like, okay, let's go downtown Disney and get some beignets afterwards. So how about for you?
So Disneyland, I don't know as well.
Disney World then.
So there's a place at Disney's Animal Kingdom that sells gluten-free churros.
That's key. Wow, how did they make those?
And it's the only place in the world that I know that makes gluten-free churros.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's what I would go to. Or to follow along with you, there is a resort at Disney World that makes gluten-free beignets.
Ooh.
It's the only place I know that does gluten-free beignets. And it's still closed. They haven't reopened that one, and there's no word of when they're going to open that hotel again. But if I could, I'd go get some of those. Yeah. Upon Disneyland's reopening, I don't know if you saw, but this summer there is a new land opening at Disney's California Adventure, the Avengers Campus.
Yes, I've been reading a little bit about this.
And with this, they are doing some pretty amazing new animatronics. I don't know. Have you seen the Spider-Man animatronic?
I've been hearing about it, but do tell.
So there's what they're now calling stunttronics, which are these animatronic robots who can do some pretty mind-blowing stunts.
I've seen those a couple of years ago. Like they were showing them like flying through the
air. They've been working on it a while.
Make it look like that's a real person. Or instead of having to throw an actor through the air, like these robots can be the ones to do it.
They've got Spider-Man. That will fly over the campus and stuff like that. Like he is web slinging through, which looks pretty amazing. And then just this week, I saw a new animatronic, which is a self-contained, not baby Groot, but like child-sized Groot. Have you seen this?
Ooh.
Who can dance all on his own. And walk around. He can walk around independently and freely. It's much more of like a robot than a animatronic.
I'm sending that to my wife right now because she will lose her mind. Baby Groot is one of the best things that's ever happened to her.
Have you seen this video though?
No, I will watch it once I guess I can start playing a little bit. I'm just afraid that we'll lose our connection if I try playing it.
No, it is pretty amazing. The technology that they've developed there, like it is mind blowing to watch this fully independent robot.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
I don't know.
I will have to.
Oh, I was pulling it up.
I will have to watch that after.
Do you see he's independently walking? Do you see him?
Oh my god! It's like we have to go now. This is Disneyland. Oh,
look at that! Look at him!
No, stop it! Stop it! That is the cutest, most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. We're gonna have to change our plans. We've got a few big ticket things in between that, but we've been planning this mega Disney World trip. We're gonna have to go to Disneyland and see Baby Groot or teenage.
So they
Groot.
Haven't announced where Groot is going to be yet, or if it is. Like, I think it's still maybe a year or two off from being in the parks. Mm-hmm. Like, Spider-Man is supposed to be this summer, but they just released this week where apparently this Groot is going to be like independent, like walking around the area or something like that.
Kind of maybe. They have the cars people. They'll kind of drive around, but they're supervised by like they dress them up as like pit crew or something like that. And you can come get photos taken with you and Lightning McQueen or whatever. I'm guessing it's going to be kind of like that, where they're like kind of like supervised, have like a little bit of a bodyguard situation.
Yeah.
But man, that's exciting. That's so cool.
It is.
And really I'm just cool. So excited. I have a friend whose husband works at Disneyland. I know it's been so sad for them that he hasn't been able to just be, cause he evokes everything you expect from a, Disney cast member, Disneyland cast member. And it's been so sad that it's been closed for over a year now, due to the pandemic. So I'm just so excited that gets to reopen. He gets to go back and do what he's really, really great at. And especially for their family, but than all the people that we've all been waiting to see Disneyland reopened, because Disney World's been open for a while. So we've just been kind of biding our time, hoping that Disneyland would catch up. And now finally, so I'm excited. That's awesome.
Yay. But that is not why we're here. We're not just a parks podcast. We're barely.
We're here for something special. We are going to be finishing up. Well, I guess we didn't finish because we didn't start one of them, but this is the end of the trilogy of Native American movies that Disney decided to come out with in 1995, themed ones. It's kind of a theme that year. Don't really know why. It's kind of awkward. We will see if it holds up this many years later, but the movie we're talking about today is the movie Pocahontas.
Cue the Disney-est sound effect.
Okay, IMDb for Pocahontas. An English soldier and the daughter of an Algonquin chief share a romance when English colonists invade 17th century Virginia. I almost flubbed Algonquin. But I wasn't, I didn't reread this beforehand. And so maybe I didn't even pronounce it right, but I felt confident in saying the words Algonquin.
So I'm fairly certain that that is incorrect, that they are not Algonquin Native Americans.
I was so confident, but the IMDb is wrong.
I'm fairly certain that they're, I can't remember the name of the tribe that was actually there. But I'm pretty sure it starts with a P, and the Algonquin is up in Canada. Like, they were native to Ontario.
Oh, I love that they're so wrong.
Because I've been to the Algonquin region I don't think that's correct, which is ironic.
Shocking that IMDb would be wrong and that Disney would be wrong about Native Americans. This is shocking to me. That this wouldn't hold
up. I can't believe this.
There's outrage.
Gambling in this establishment. I'm outraged.
Oh, goodness. Eddie, was this what's your history with Pocahontas?
So, to my best recollection and my parents' best recollection, I believe that Pocahontas was actually the first movie that I saw in theaters.
Interesting.
To best recollection.
Okay.
It was, you know, we moved to Indiana in 93. This came out in 95. Do you remember there was an old movie theater in Plainfield, kind of on the old historic side of it? I don't think it's open anymore. But
Eddie, you remember, we were not avid movie theater goers growing up. My first movie in theaters was Star Wars Episode II. So other than the IMAX was different. Those were educational things, but I didn't see a movie theater till much, much later, Star Wars Episode II. So no, you were way ahead of me on this. So I don't know about this playing theater.
I remember going with a group of people. There was like several families that we went and saw Pocahontas in theater together. So that is my nostalgic kind of remembrance of Pocahontas. I don't believe I had watched it too many times after that first viewing.
Interesting.
Yeah, I maybe watched it one other time since then, but
we watched this quite a bit. We wore this VHS out quite a bit. Watched this several times, sang all the songs, knew all the beats of the. Even rewatching, I was like, remember these beats? Remember all of these different iconic moments? Over my head.
I could see your sisters enjoying this.
I remember having fond memories about it, the different moments of it, the music, especially very iconic songs in this, for Just Around the River Bend, Colors of the Wind. There's a lot of big ones, but you mostly remember the good stuff near kind of near the beginning, like the first half of the film before it starts getting darker. Granted, we will have many thoughts about what is actually dark and stuff like later on in this. We wore this thing out and we watched it quite a bit, but it has been a long time since I've seen it myself.
So let's start with the music, because I think we could all agree that probably the music is the best part of this.
Oh, yes.
Movie.
Yeah.
Okay. And the songs and score were written by the one and only Alan Menken,
yep,
who has pretty much composed all of our childhood.
Composed our childhood.
All of the different songs. He, of course, his writing partner, Howard Ashman, had passed away by this moment. And so with this, he needed a new writing partner. And so he was teamed up with the Tony Award-winning lyricist Stephen Schwartz, who later on went on to pen such hits as Wicked, which was, pretty big. So the two of them came together to write the music to this, which, I think is phenomenal. I think you've got some of the, some really poetic lyrics, but also some really sweeping melodies that I think are really beautiful. I think everybody knows, of course, Just Around the River Bend and Colors of the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are really good. But I think in particular, in rewatching this movie, the song that stood out to me the most was Savages, the song at the end.
Drums of War.
That really told the story, that told the perspective that the movie was trying to convey better than I had remembered it. Where you've got both sides calling the other savages and just not stopping to understand each other. I thought that was a really interesting song and great lyrics behind it.
I would agree. The music is definitely one of the highlights, is probably the probably biggest highlight of this film. Also the artwork, just like I wrote down here as like kind of halfway through the movie, I was like, I wish America looked like this, like the colors and the beauty of every, like where they just kind of, he goes up to the top and sees across the land. There's something so majestic and beautiful about the untamed America that is so interesting.
The art direction in this is very interesting as well, right? It is the colors, the palette that they chose. It was like a suspended sunrise.
Yes.
Like you had a constant pink and
purples,
light red, purples, like those hues just kind of were always suspended throughout all of that, which I thought was a very an interesting direction that it was the scenic elements were beautiful. I struggled with the people, like the way that they drew the people in this.
Gotcha.
They felt very blockish.
Well, her best friend is like if they had just like a template, they just used the template.
It's just static movement.
Yeah, and she had the movement, but then also just the when you look so if you've seen it, like the Lego movie where all the characters kind of have different things, but then the main guy is just the classic Lego character. That's what her friend and even like Kokoum and a couple other people are just like, they didn't give him like any like personality to just the way that they were drawing the actual people. No, that's a good point. Like I hadn't thought about that.
Now the scenic elements, and I alluded to this at the conclusion of a couple of episodes ago when we were talking about geographic incorrectness. In naming Native Americans Indians. You also have some geographic incorrectness of Virginia has it's not the Pacific Northwest. Let's just put it that way. And there are these moments where some of the scenic scapes are look a little bit more like you're in the Pacific Northwest than actual like Virginia, which is interesting because Virginia is a beautiful state. Like, Shenandoah National Park is one of our favorites. It is beautiful, but it's not the Pacific Northwest. It's a different kind of rolling, sprawling beauty.
But didn't they like say they landed in Virginia, but they didn't really land in Virginia? There was I know that there was like all of this confusion about where they landed. I mean, even just the idea that they were landing in the West Indies alone.
So let's just put it this way. There's history and then there's Disney movies, right? And
that's immediately what we talked about after this film. Immediately that was what our conversation was after this film.
And I need to send you, I found this, the making of Pocahontas on YouTube or whatever. And it's it's got Roy E. Disney. It's got Michael Eisner. And they're all talking about how this is Disney's first film based off of historical characters, you know, and they're making a big deal. This is
should have tried a little bit harder on some of the features,
but multiple times. And they admit this multiple times. They admit this. They go, well, there's the true kind of history of Pocahontas, which historians debate, and there's a lot of uncertainty about that, what that really is. And then there's kind of the mythology and the myth of Pocahontas. And since historians aren't really sure, we felt like we couldn't. And so we leaned more into the myth of it all, you know? And so I stopped and I'm like, then this isn't your first story about a true person.
Exactly.
Sure, there is someone named Pocahontas that had historical significance in our country, but it's not this person. You've created somebody totally different and just happened to name her Pocahontas. You just happened to name him John Smith because they're nothing like each other, right? Like when John Smith arrives, Pocahontas is like all of 10 years old. So it would be awkward if that. It'd be awkward if there was a true love story. And you need to watch parts of this because they're like, yeah, it would have been awkward for there to have been a true love story here, knowing she was so much younger. But we just felt like it made such a compelling story that we added that. This sounds
exactly like if I was sitting there thinking about what they were doing, this is what they did.
Yeah, and they own it, and they made a making of documentary where they're just like, yeah, we made this up. Yeah, we kind of just, you know, flourished the story here a little bit.
There basically was a moment where Pocahontas was a real person that saved the life of John Smith and basically like wouldn't let them kill him. And that's what this majority of this entire story is based off of. And there's like, okay, how can we get them to this real moment in our own way? Possible.
Right. Have you heard of Adam Ruins Everything?
Oh, yes.
He does an episode on Pocahontas. And again, his estimation is that like John Smith is a blowhard. He's just kind of this guy who, you know, wields wild tales like in True Life, and that all of his memoir is just kind of made up to make him sound like this great guy. And so even the whole element of whether or not Pocahontas saved John Smith is uncertain.
Yep.
What we do know is that there was a tribe of Native Americans near Jamestown who helped the early settlers, who gave them food. And the chief's daughter was named Pocahontas, and she in particular helped the early settlers, was a big part of that.
And then
that's what we do know. Now, these story plots and all of this, and like, she eventually does go to London. She dies at the age of 22 because of disease.
She gets kidnapped. Then while being kidnapped, she falls in love. She then gets married to John Rolf or whatever his name is.
Yes.
And then apparently the thing I was reading, that's like, from all accounts, it seemed mutual that they wanted to get married. And then she goes over to England, and I think she dies over there. And it's a weird, tragic story that it's just like so messy. So really, we're going off the word of John Smith, that there was a moment that happened and everything else has been fabricated as well. So this is pure. This might be actually more mythology. There might be more truth to Cinderella than to
I would agree with that. There's no way that we can say that this is history in any way.
Yep.
The only thing historical about it is the name. And that the first settlement, you know, was Jamestown, the Virginia Company, and the date, 1620,
So weird. Let's give ourselves a little bit of a preview. I'm sure there's more serious things we want to talk about, but some of the characters that I loved from this, from my childhood. I mean, Grandmother Willow. Seeing her pop back up, I was like, oh, I forgot about Grandmother Willow. Like, this is a person that I enjoyed having in my life. She's got some spunk to her. But I enjoyed seeing her again.
I love Miko. I think Miko is one of the funnier kind of animal sidekicks of the Disney movies. Whoever animated him, I need to dig deep and try and find that. But his physicality is really funny. I really like his physicality.
The raccoon?
The raccoon, yeah, Miko.
Yeah, the raccoon is definitely steals a lot of scenes in this, and his fascination with those little cookies. But him going back and forth with the little dog, they added such a little bit of a spunk and life to it.
Yeah. No, it is phenomenal. Who else do we have there? We have Thomas. Did you pick up on who voiced Thomas?
No, please, but I'm sure you know.
He has already appeared in the podcast.
Okay. I can't remember.
No clue whatsoever.
I'm sorry. My mind is blanking right now.
Christian Bale voiced Thomas.
Seriously? That's crazy.
Yes. You'll have to go back and just watch a brief little moment, and you're like, wait a second. That is Christian Bale.
So Thomas is the young adventurer, right? I was thinking the guy who was taking care of the dog. And so that's where I was like, wait, no, like the guy who came highly recommended or whatever. Never mind.
So what's interesting, him, you're thinking of Wiggins.
Wiggins.
David Ogden Stiers, who is the voice of Cogsworth in Beauty and the Beast. He is the voice of Governor Ratcliffe and Wiggins. He voices both characters. So the scenes with the governor and Wiggins, he's just talking back and forth to himself.
That is funny.
Isn't that hysterical?
Oh, goodness.
I love David Ogden Stiers. He's done a lot of other fun stuff.
But it's fun.
Got a great voice.
Yep. I enjoyed some of the other guys that they're that is on their crew. Like, they had a kind of a somewhat lightheartedness when they weren't like trying to kill people or make racist comments. That was the hard thing to stomach in this, was just the
savages. The
anytime, I mean, they're like doing their thing, they're rowing the ship, like they're doing their thing, and then they're just like throwing out all of these like racist and slanderous things about these people that they don't even know. I just started writing them down: Indians, natives, heathens, savages, uncivilized, like just all of these terms that it's just like, now watching it many years later, 15, 16 years later or whatever, just like, oh, it's hard to watch at times.
I do appreciate that was the perspective, you know? I mean, you do have to preserve some that historical accuracy that when they came, that's what they immediately viewed the Native Americans as, but the Native Americans showed themselves not to be that.
Yes, and you can, like we talked about in the front, the savages, the drums of war song near the end, where even the Native Americans have kind of come full circle come to that point where they're both seeing each other as savages. It's just kind of sad that they both come to this, they have this amazing moment, but then, you know, throughout the history, it's like, it's only downhill from here for all of basically all Native Americans. And like, it's supposed to be this like triumphant moment where we both see each other eye for eye, and then the rest of history is just a, not tragedy. To pun, but it's a tragedy, to trail of many tears. Yeah. So it's hard to see this and not think about what's going to be happening just around the corner. There's so many puns I'm throwing out here and I feel weird saying them, but
yes, be careful.
That's where it's kind of hard to really fully enjoy this film, even though I can see what they're trying to do. That's where some of it starts to get kind of hard to like really fully enjoy this. Now being older and having some of the wool pulled out from over my eyes and knowing more about history.
Yeah. I mean, they do a good job of representing Native American culture at the time. I don't feel like it's
much better job than Man of the House.
Right. We don't know about if it's better than Squanto because we decided not to watch that film. So, I mean, at least it has that going for it, in that, you know, there's somewhat accurate representation, as much as
whether it's the Algonquin people or not is still to be decided.
Well, that's IMDb's issue that they need to resolve, but yes.
Or is it Disney? Because a lot of times those IMDb was literally written by the studios.
They just pull it down.
And they pull it, yeah. Or because most of the time it's a filmmaker that is, or the production company that puts out the film, they're the ones filling out the IMDb description and stuff like that. Eddie, right now you could create your own IMDb for a fake movie that's not happening if you wanted to and put that all on there. But that is.
Did you see this week? The FBI just busted some Hollywood actor, I can't remember who it was, that they had a Ponzi scheme going where they had forged all of these movie deals with Netflix and other things, and they were going out and getting investors to invest in their fake movie based off of a fake deal that they had made with like Netflix and some other studio.
Of course.
And
of
so
course.
they had made all this money.
It's actually not the craziest new story coming out of Hollywood right now. So, but we won't dig.
Yes.
We won't dig into that.
No, let's not dig there.
More clips.
Oh my goodness. So, I do have to give a little shout out here. In my digging, I discovered one of our favorites that has popped up on our podcast a couple times. Jim Cummings is in this movie. He is the singing voice for the chief and for Kikata. kind of the two Native American leaders there.
Okay.
Apparently the voice actors could not sing well or something. I don't know. And so they bring in Jim Cummings to be their singing voices, which is interesting. I guess he's really good at kind of matching their voice, but also singing on tune. And then you had two voices for Pocahontas. You had a speaking voice and then a singing voice, which is always fascinating to me when they split the voice out like that.
So it looks like they did. I didn't look at this before. It looks like they did cast these Native American characters, maybe not the singing voice, but Irene Bedard is an Alaska Native actress. Looks yes. like James Apamut Fall. I don't know about for Kokoam. They did.
Most of them they did, yeah.
Some of them they did. It looks like, I guess, I don't know about. Oh, Linda. Oh, so the voice of Grandmother Willow
is
the lady who looks like the inspiration from The Incredibles.
But, Edna Mode.
Edna Mode, but I don't think that's not who voices Edna Mode, but like that lady who looked like the inspiration for her. So good on you, Disney,
She's from your favorite TV show, NCIS Los Angeles.
Yes, my favorite show. So I am glad that they at least cast Native American people for some of these roles. But I thought it was interesting in the credits. So as the credits are rolling, they gave each of the people, we talked about separating everything, each of the people got their own credit. So they had Pocahontas, voice actor, this person, animator, this person, supervising animator, this person. Like they gave them all their own section for the main few people, not just voice talent, but also animator and supervising animator for each one of these major characters, probably because there wasn't like a ton of major characters in this. But I noticed that as it was going through, it was like they separated all of that out.
We haven't stated a more obvious one, the voice of John Smith. You didn't pick up who was the voice actor for John Smith?
Oh, wow. How did I miss this, Eddie? How did I miss Mel Gibson?
Mel Gibson is the voice of John Smith. And I don't know if it's because I know Mel Gibson's voice well or what. But personally, I just feel like the voice and the look of the character don't fit. Like the whole time John Smith is... I don't know. There was something I just was like, yeah, it just doesn't fit. Just doesn't fit for me. It was a really weird one. So yeah, Mel Gibson's in this movie as well. Yeah.
So any last words? Or are we ready to rate this thing?
Let's rate this. And then I've got some final words based off of my rating.
Okay. So I'll go first.
I'll let you go first.
Okay. I'm going to give this a 2.5 because there's a lot of scenes of like just like turning it on. I'm not going to turn this thing on. It's like it's fun. There's especially the first half of this film of like the music and the different characters and stuff like that. And I don't know that I would go out of my way to really turn this thing on, but I wouldn't turn it off immediately. Like I'd be like, yeah, this is fun, whatever. It's just kind of hard when you know all of the racial subplots to like fully enjoy. What's going on this. So I'm going to give it like 2.5.
I'm shocked. We are in complete agreement. I would give it a 2.5 as well. That was what I had.
I mean, we were in perfect agreement on the last one we watched with Man of the House, giving it a solid 1, but.
Oh, that's true. I don't find in this film, I don't find these characters compelling whatsoever. Like I the really main, like
Pocahontas and John Smith.
Yeah, like I'm just not concerned. I'm not concerned with their journey. I'm just I don't really care what's happening. I find the art, the scenic art, beautiful, and I find the music interesting. And like they're enough to give it a 2.5. Everything else about this film, I'm just like, I don't really care about it. So yeah, just the character. I'm not moved by the story whatsoever.
And if you had started, I probably would have downgraded my mind to a 2 then. If you said all that first, I'd be like, you're right. I don't really care about John Smith or Pocahontas. I guess I'll make this a 2 instead.
Yeah, and I think I was leaning more towards a 2, but then I
the music did it for you.
The music, and I honestly, like, I do find this, the scenic art, like, whoever was the landscape artist for this.
It's nice just to have the, in the background, like
yeah, the color palette.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I don't know if you have seen this, the Zenimation on Disney Plus. This is a really kind of interesting thing. They're doing these moodscapes. They just did one on Planet Earth as well, that came out for Earth Day. They use a lot of the Pocahontas scenicscape for those animations because it is. It's just a very relaxing, kind of peaceful art style. But and that's probably what gave it the little extra half for me. But I don't find this compelling in any way. And really, this is the moment where we see the shift in Disney animation. I think up to this point, we just had solid entry after solid entry, right? That you went, especially from Little Mermaid to Beauty and the Beast to Aladdin to The Lion King. Like, this is when they're just a juggernaut. And Pocahontas is when Disney animation starts to slip a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you've seen, have you seen the Disney Plus documentary Waking Sleeping Beauty yet?
I forget if I've, I know my wife has seen it, but.
I've watched it twice now just because I find the story going on behind the scene really fascinating. They bookend it here and say that it's 84 to 94 is the true Disney Renaissance that,
okay,
at least behind the scenes, that's where a lot of the things are happening. You don't see it fully reflected in the box office until 2000. But you can kind of see it from this moment on that we're going to have these hit and misses on the Disney animated films, that there's some that are really good and nobody will argue with it. You've got those that are a little like, some love them, some hate them. And then you've got the ones that are just like, not good at all. And I think Pocahontas is that first one where you just kind of get that leave it or take it. Some love it, some hate it type of feeling. I think this is where we start to feel the shift and the change in Disney animation.
There we go. Just one last shout out for Billy Connolly, is the voice of Ben. Just didn't want to go without saying that. I love me some Billy Connolly.
And next up on our walkthrough, we stay in 1995 and we come to one of my family's favorite live action films, Operation Dumbo Drop. It's so cute.
We get a little bit more Danny Glover in our life.
We always need a little more Danny Glover.
But that is it for today. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe wherever you get podcasts. But that is going to be it for another episode of Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Thanks. We'll be right back.